Hey everyone, it's Patrick Gray here. I have added this audio to my podcast about Bloomberg's supply chain attack piece because, well, the only source I could find who would corroborate the Bloomberg piece has now retracted their claims. This is a source who has provided me with good information in the past. I've known them for about 15 years and they are very well plugged in. They showed me photos they said were from a teardown of a Supermicro motherboard. These photos showed an unlabeled integrated circuit the source says was likely a hardware backdoor. Furthermore, the source said there were other problems with the Supermicro gear, including vulnerable firmware and security functions that just didn't work properly. Now the source says the photos were from different equipment, not their teardown of Supermicro gear, and that they did not find hardware backdoors on the Supermicro equipment or in the Supermicro equipment. So basically, that source's credibility with me is completely shot right now, and the best I can do is retract my repetition of the source's claim that they had verified backdoors in the Supermicro equipment were present. So I'm not going to nuke the podcast. This podcast still contains an interesting interview and discussion with Stephen Ridley about the plausibility of these types of backdoors, the types of backdoors described in the article. But I am absolutely revoking the single data point I could turn up that corroborated the Bloomberg piece. That piece, mind you, another night and it's looking shaky as hell. Britain's National Cybersecurity Centre has added weight to Apple and Amazon's denials overnight. And conversations relayed to Reuters by former Apple insiders claim the FBI are as mystified as anyone. Now, in addition to that, people are starting to go back through these particular journalists' stories, things they've filed for Bloomberg over the years, and there are a couple of other sensational InfoSec stories they've posted in the past that also look shaky as hell. One claiming the US government knew about Heartbleed in advance, and another claiming a pipeline explosion in Turkey was the work of Russian hackers. So yeah, consider this me retracting the data point I share in the intro to this podcast. I'm sorry about that. And let's see what happens over the next week. This whole thing just got a lot more interesting. Thanks. Hey everyone, and welcome to this special Risky Business feature podcast. My name is Patrick Gray, and of course the topic today is the sensational Bloomberg story that was published this morning in the United States. Bloomberg has run a piece by reporters Jordan Robertson and Michael Riley that alleges Apple and Amazon discovered Supermicro motherboards shipped to them came with hardware backdoors soldered onto them, and in some cases actually embedded in between circuit board layers. Now, all of the piece's sources are anonymous, but as I mentioned, there are two bylines on this piece. It comes from Bloomberg, and it says that there were 17 anonymous sources all sharing information, the same information, with Bloomberg on this. These sources are described as current and former national security sources, and also sources at AWS and Apple. They claim that Apple actually severed its relationship with Supermicro following the discovery of hardware backdoors. The severing of this relationship, you know, can be confirmed by historical reporting, but Apple says the circumstances of that parting are not what Bloomberg says it was. Furthermore, Bloomberg has alleged Amazon was doing due diligence on a company it planned to acquire called Elemental, and it commissioned a third-party review of Elemental's kit, which used Supermicro hardware, and that third-party reviewer found the same back doors. Now, of course, Amazon is disputing that as well. Both Apple and Amazon have vehemently denied the accuracy of the Bloomberg piece. We're talking absolute and very well detailed denials here, and we haven't heard anything on the record from the US government about this story, or indeed any follow-up reporting from other outlets, even citing unnamed sources. So there is a bit of a cloud over this thing. That said, I did speak with Bloomberg's Jordan Robertson about his story for about half an hour. Now, he's obviously having a pretty interesting day, but he is firmly standing by his piece. He says, for his part, he cannot speculate on why Apple and Amazon have issued these denials, and he says all he can do is point to the robustness of the reporting. Now, in a situation like this, I usually hit the phones myself, and I did actually turn up a data point that is possible verification of a key aspect of the story. I know someone who did a teardown on a Supermicro board a while back, and they said they found problems with it, including extra unlabeled devices on sensitive buses. I have seen a photo of one such device, and we're talking about an 8-pin single outline integrated circuit white in colour. The Bloomberg story shows a six-pin white SOIC. So where does this leave us? We've got a claim, we've got counterclaims, and we've got some very limited supporting information. The good news is, I suspect every single hardware security geek on the planet is currently tearing down Supermicro motherboards right now, looking for anything to substantiate the claims made by Bloomberg. So that is good news. We will know if the reporting is accurate soon enough, and that might shed some light on certain things, like, for example, why Chinese vendors are getting locked out of 5G builds in many Five Eyes countries. Anyway, I thought it'd make sense to interview someone who knows a lot about hardware security and get their take on this and hear whether or not they think what was described in the Bloomberg article is a plausible thing. Stephen Ridley is a security researcher. He's a trainer and company founder who knows a lot about hardware security. Stephen actually spent years teaching a course called Software Exploitation via Hardware Exploitation, or SEX via HEX, and he currently works for the company he founded, Senrio, and he joined me to talk about this amazing story. And I started off by asking him what he thinks of the accuracy of the Bloomberg piece, just in a general gut feel sense. And here's what he had to say.
You know, it's one of those things where, like, every few years there's some backdoor story or some leak of some kind, and it, like, jolts people into realizing, oh, crap, there's, like, this is possible. It reminds them of the art of the possible, you know? In reality, like, the technology involved, the methodologies involved are nothing new. So in that way, to answer your question, like, the veracity, like, it's totally possible. And based on, you know, the outlets that the news is coming from, Bloomberg and whatnot, I think it's probably pretty true. I do think there's a possibility there are a couple different elements to this story that were mixed in, and then there were some details that were omitted to make it a little layperson friendly, but my gut is that it's probably true.
Yeah, I mean, the spanner in the works here are the denials from Apple and Amazon. I mean, we're talking about flat, you know, comprehensive denials from publicly listed companies who would get who would have a pretty hard time if those denials were proved false. So I think that's what's got everyone confused.
Yeah. So that part I don't know too much about. Obviously, I'm a technologist. I'm a security guy. So I was, like, kind of just looking at, you know, is this possible? You know, what is it? You know, is it likely that these things were actually being used? And if they were, kind of, what was the attack chain or the tool chain? What would that look like? Those are the things I was thinking about. In that way, it's totally possible. But from the company angle, I could totally see there maybe being some details there. Like, maybe those specific servers weren't used in those environments, so they didn't like having their name globbed in with the release. Right. I don't think it changes the fact that these tools were probably found in the wild, but what's probably disputable is who they were deployed with. And that's yeah, something I could totally see.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. And look, one thing I can say, right, is I've been hitting the phones, so to speak. I spoke to one person I know. I had a conversation with them. There is only one part of that conversation that I can share. Okay. And that is that I know someone who has pulled down one of these Supermicro boards. They evaluated one of these Supermicro boards and they found problems with those boards and extra and this is agreed wording. They found extra unlabeled components on sensitive buses. That's the wording that I've been permitted to use, right? So this would suggest that perhaps perhaps the story is broadly accurate in the sense that, the Chinese agencies have been successful in having extra hardware added to motherboards that are present in the United States. I think we can say that part, it seems, and that's the crazy part of the story. But it sort of feels like that's the part that's checking out.
Yeah, I totally agree with you there. Like, the thing is, I mean, I think the big takeaway from this whole thing is really just supply chain security. Like, there have been zealots in the industry, you know, like our company, you know, researchers and stuff who've been talking about this for a while till they're blue in the face. But it takes these incidents for people to really realize, oh, crap, you know, there are a ton of different ways that someone, if they wanted, could insert themselves into the supply chain. I mean, we could even be talking about, like, a value-added reseller that just has a couple special engineers on staff that, you know, pop open the boxes and put the stuff in, right? So it could be, like,
And I see where you're getting at, right? And I kind of had a similar line on the whole Kaspersky thing, which is it doesn't matter if it is true. What matters is that it could be true, right? So I'm kind of going to operate under that assumption for a little while, which is that, look, it's not absolutely confirmed. It's my sense that the story is broadly accurate. And I have had discussions with other people that have supported the idea that this story is broadly accurate. The nice thing is, of course, that right now, as we speak, as we record this, people all over the world are currently tearing down Supermicro motherboards. So I suspect we'll know more in a few days. But look, I want to talk to you about what's possible, right? There are a couple of little red flags in that story in terms of technical things that didn't sound quite right. There was a part of the story where they spoke about these motherboards beaconing back. Now, if you're going to include hardware backdoors on stuff at mass scale, you're not going to have these things pinging back to C2 infrastructure by default. That just doesn't make any sense, right? But we'll get to my theory on how I think this subversion might have worked. But okay, so just taking it back a step, the Bloomberg article has a picture of a little IC in there. It's a tiny little 8-pin integrated circuit that they say they found next to the BMC, right? The baseboard management controller on these motherboards. Yep. Stephen, you are an expert in hardware security. What could you do with an 8-pin IC on that location on a motherboard? What would you actually be able to do?
Well, thanks for calling me an expert. I think I'm just a researcher who's just super interested in this stuff. There's a lot of smarter folks out there, but even just from my level of skill and kind of the work that we've done, the research we've done, we've recreated these kinds of things in our lab, and we've actually done attacks through 8-pin SOICs that were meant to house serial EEPROM, which is kind of where firmware for devices tends to be stored. We've actually backdoored those, and in fact, it's actually just one of the lab exercises in a training we give. So that's how easy it is. Like, people who've never done hardware before, you know, they sit down with us, and then in an hour or two, they've backdoored the Linux firmware in a common household router, right? That's how easy it is. So to answer your question more directly, what I suspect that 8-pin SOIC is EEPROM, like I just mentioned, and I think it was. If the claims are true, it's likely that it stored a piece of firmware that was loaded by either the MCU, so the main processor, or some other critical device. So there's some critical firmware which contains executable code that's being pulled out of that device. Now, from what I saw, folks talking about it on the web and even in the article, is that that chip that wasn't actually populated. So the device that's sent out to, end users had that EEPROM missing. But what's really different here, and what you have to realize, is that if it was a serial EEPROM chip, it would be the MCU or the microcontroller that loads that firmware would, try to check for the presence of that EEPROM at boot time or during some critical part of its operation. So if it was just missing, and then that, the MCU went to go try to use it, it's not there, oh well, it moves on. But maybe the issue here is that with a device that is attached, in this case, it could spoof, pretend to be the EEPROM that was there, supply a binary blob or some data that contains that executable firmware or some code or configuration to the MCU, which then gets loaded, and now it's executing or doing something that it wasn't intended by the person who shipped it to do.
Okay, but the question becomes, like, at what point is this code extracted from the serial EEPROM and run, right? Like, it just, that's the thing. There's got to be some sort of triggering event to make that process happen, right?
That's a great question. So it really depends on, and this is where kind of some of those details are missing, and you accurately called them red flags, things we should be kind of thinking about or skeptical about. So in an ideal scenario, or in the most common scenario, if that chip is for SPI EEPROM, what tends to happen is that the microcontroller, the MCU, will access that EEPROM at boot time. And it usually contains, in some devices, it contains everything. It's like the file system, like on routers and stuff. It'll contain U-boot if it's, like a Linux kind of thing. It'll contain the kernel. And then sometimes it even contains some firmware for peripherals. So sometimes it'll have like a firmware for the baseband processor of like, you know, like a Wi-Fi adapter or something like that. All that stuff can fit in really small serial EEPROM, like 8 megs or something like that. So what happens is the MCU is generally configured to access that data as kind of like if you think about your CMOS or your bootloader settings, like you can set the order. You can be like, boot from DVD, or if the DVD is not there, boot from USB, or if USB is not there, then I want you to boot from this partition, right? And so what's happening is the MCU is bootstrapping itself, and it probably, if this is how it was configured, is preferring the image to boot from serial EEPROM. Right?
So the purpose of that chip, of that EEPROM at that point, would be to subvert analysis, right? So if you're pulling down, you know, the main storage relating to the microcontroller there, and you're dumping that, right, you're not going to see this malicious code. So this whole thing is like basically an anti-analysis thing. I mean, like, what's the purpose of that chip? You know, why not just subvert the microcontroller? Why would you have it pulling code to execute every time when you could just put that code, you know, where, you know, like, do you know what I mean?
No, I see what you're saying. So in this case, it's actually just, it's easier, right? So if you know everything about that board, you know kind of what version of, you know, the firmware needs to be loaded into that chip, you can just, you know, extract that firmware, install your backdoor. You can either backdoor the kernel, you could put some stuff into the bootloader, or you could put some stuff into the file system that's meant to be bootstrapped. You can put your stuff basically anywhere in there. So kernel space, user space, whatever, in the bootloader, recompress that thing, put it back onto the EEPROM, and then depending on how they implemented it, then you're executing either when the system boots, you're executing in the kernel, or you're executing like some user land process that has an RC script.
Glorious. I'm with you. Okay, I totally get it. So this is really just an easy way to get Trojan firmware loaded at boot time.
Yes.
Okay.
If that's in fact what that SOIC was being used for.
Yeah, no, you're making a lot of sense. Okay, so the question becomes then, the story said, and this is something I alluded to earlier, the story said that, oh, you know, they detected command and control pings coming from these motherboards, and it was all very weird, but they didn't see any exfiltration. Now, I'm thinking, you know, if I'm the Chinese government department responsible for this program, I don't want every single motherboard that I've trojaned in this way pinging back to a C2, because I'm going to get rumbled, right? Like, that's an aspect of this story that just straight up doesn't make any sense whatsoever. Yeah. So I thought, okay, what does make sense? Now, the presentations I have seen on hardware subversion, one of them was at Breakpoint. I know you spoke at a couple of them. I'm not sure if you were there for this one. The Trojan hard disk controllers, did you see that one?
Yeah, that was 2012, I think.
Yeah, it was. And that was amazing, right? So what they'd done is they'd basically Trojaned a hard disk drive controller and they'd programmed it to activate on a magic string.
Yep.
So if this magic string passed onto the disk at any point, now that could be from a HTTP request, it could be from an email, could be from anything. If this magic string, you know, is being passed to the disk, it would activate a routine like, say, swapping out the root password hash for a known hash, right? And then you could send it another magic string and it would swap it back. Do you think that the most logical way for them to have subverted this hardware would be to use a magic string of some kind?
It really depends on where their stuff lives. When I say their stuff, I mean their Trojan or whatever. So and so what you're saying is totally possible. It's totally been done before. It's totally feasible. That much I agree with. But it's really hard to say, and this is kind of what I was saying, you know, at the top of our chat here, is that it feels like there might be like multiple findings that were conflated in the writing of this article. So it may be that the little chip they found is, you know, the way that let's just say the bootloader was backdoored, right? The bootloader is kind of like a first stage thing, and then maybe it does some, you know, some, or maybe it's there's stuff in the kernel, right? Maybe they injected some a custom compiled kernel or something. But then it sounds like maybe the hardware was just kind of a first stage, and then there's probably some additional stuff. So there might even be stuff from user land on these devices. There might be kernel space stuff. And it sounds like maybe that beaconing stuff, like that's obviously something you would see more like a user land Trojan. right? So, you know, some piece, some executable that's running.
But you wouldn't want this stuff activating by default, right? Because it's noisy as f***. You're going to see it.
It is super noisy, but you know what? In my experience with malware analysis, I worked at McAfee a little bit and worked close to the Avert Labs guys, and had friends at Mandiant, you know, really high up, like early guys there. And it's just, I mean, one common refrain is like how ridiculously simple a lot of tools end up being and how ridiculously noisy they end up being. So,
but
I mean,
we are talking about an allegedly widespread, you know, hardware trojaning of commonly manufactured devices, right? Like, I mean, I get what you're saying, but this is different. This is like this would be a secretive program that, if discovered, would have serious ramifications for the Chinese economy. I mean, you just look at the reaction over the last, you know, 15 hours or whatever since this story was published. You know, it's already a pretty wild ride. I mean, to me, it just doesn't ring true that they would allow this sort of thing to happen.
I'm with you on that. Like, just, I mean, and even just looking at this, like, operationally, like, if you ran this program or whatever, that, you know, you're the guys behind this, you'd probably prefer to have a silent until activated kind of thing.
That's exactly what I'm getting at. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's totally true, right? Because, like, you don't want you don't want some completely, like, say you're targeting one group and then your stuff ends up at another group. You don't want your whole operation to be compromised by the stuff you know.
Yeah, by like 3 million super micro motherboards all pinging a single IP address in Beijing, right? Yeah. Like that kind of looks sus.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So hang on, just a quick question. How much can you actually store on a tiny little 8-pin serial EEPROM? What sort of data can you actually get on that? Because that thing is tiny.
They're tiny, but I mean, you know how storage is these days. Usually, what we see is like 8 megs. Usually, that's just enough for
that's
like
enough,
a bootloader,
man.
Or UF. Yeah, that's totally enough. That is totally enough. Like, especially if you're talking about the bootloader, right? And the bootloader can do things like contact or access the network device, right? So, like you. Right there, you're already kind of getting call home capability and that kind of stuff, if that's what you wanted to do.
Now, look, this is your field of expertise. This is something that you've been obviously, I mean, you teach a course called Software Exploitation via Hardware Exploitation, or you did anyway, but I guess my question is, you would be reasonably plugged into the rumor mill on this stuff. Have you heard anything about this over the last few years?
About this specific case or cases like it?
Both.
Man, you like jamming a brother up, don't you?
Think carefully, then answer.
So I'll say this, you know, like, I think there was, you know, obviously the Snowden leaks and stuff, and then some of the subsequent, work done by security researchers, like, Michael Osman, Joe Fitzpatrick, all those guys, they teamed up and did that NSA playset where they made and recreated the hardware from the, you know, those leaks. And I think the great takeaway from their work is it showed how easy it was to recreate those things and how simple they were, how they weren't really black magic. Right. And so in that way, to answer your question, you know, those kinds of tools, like from those releases, are exactly this kind of stuff, right?
Okay, but have you heard any rumors or anything to suggest that China is behaving in this way?
God, man. You didn't tell me you were going to ask me this.
Okay. Look, I think.
No, it's all right. No, I mean, I've heard reports of, I don't want to say specifically China, but devices like this being found in the wild. Certainly. Yes. I've heard reports of that.
That's good enough. Right. So that's, you've caught that on the grapevine over the last few years.
Yeah, totally. Yep.
Yeah. But I suppose a key point you're getting across here is that this sort of thing is absolutely achievable.
There's some really fantastic research on this stuff. Before it became kind of in vogue to do this stuff. I remember, I think 2006 at DEF CON or Black Hat, there was some work done on like backdooring the firmware of, I think it was a Realtek Ethernet controller.
I remember
Wi-Fi
that.
Controller. Yeah. Right. So there's just, I mean, there is such a history if you really start digging around for really fascinating research and once you kind of know it's there, the realm and the art of the possible, like, balloons, you know what I mean? So this stuff is like totally, at this point, it's like table stakes. Like an intern could have likely done something like this. Obviously, maybe not the hardware part, the hardware design fabrication part, but like this is simple stuff. And I think it's important for people to kind of think about these supply chain kind of issues.
Well, look, Stephen, I think we're going to wrap it up there. That's a really excellent overview. Thank you so much for your time. I certainly appreciate it, and I'm sure the Risky Business listeners appreciate it as well.
Thank you so much.
That was Stephen Ridley there. Big thanks to him for that. And that is it from me today and this week. I do hope you found this podcast useful. But until Monday, when I'm back on deck with a Soapbox edition, I've been Patrick Gray. Thanks for listening.